Welcome everybody to the Moose Room. It is in fact a Christmas miracle. I am here 2 weeks in a row with Bradley, which is always very exciting. And we are joined once again by a guest this week. So we have Drew Swartz here with us today. He is a grad student at the University of Minnesota working with Gerard Kramer. And so, Drew, we're excited to have you here today to talk about all sorts of things. So welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm actually excited to be here with Emily again 2 weeks in a row. That's like a record.
Again, Christmas miracle, you know.
That's right, exactly.
All right. Well, you know, Drew, before we really dive into getting to know you and talking about some of the research and work you've been doing, and I know you are a listener of the Moose Room, but we do have our guest super secret questions to ask you. So we are going to start with those today. So Drew, despite what Bradley will tell you, there are no wrong answers. Bradley has it in his mind that there are some right answers, but we accept all answers here. So your first question, Drew, is what is your favorite breed of beef cattle?
Yeah, for beef cattle, I'm just going to have to keep it simple and go with Angus. As we did during my undergrad, I would do some research with Angus beef cattle, and it was one of my very beginning research interests or research entries. So, yeah, I'll stick with those.
We'll accept that today, Drew.
Even though Bradley's disappointed.
Exactly. Well, it seems like Angus is pulling ahead once again at 19 for the top. Hereford's at 14. Black Baldy 5, Scottish Highlander 5, Charolais 4, Red Angus 4, Shorthorn 3, Semitol 2, Belted Galloway 2, Brahma 2, and a whole bunch with 1. Stabilizer, Galvikinia, Nelore Jersey, Belgian Blue, Brangus, Piedmontese, White Park, and Miniature Scottish Highlander.
All right. So there are the...
I have nothing else to say. Black Angus keeps pulling ahead. We need Black some more Hereford guests. If you like Herefords, please contact me so to be on the podcast.
All right. Well, now we'll move on to our second question, which is, Drew, what is your favorite breed of dairy cattle?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Holsteins, but I think my heart has to go to the red and white Holsteins.
Red and white. All right. I think Brad will accept that, as long as it's not black and white, right?
Yes, we will accept that today. That definitely, definitely. And that has increased red and white numbers for us.
Yeah, but it's been a while.
It has been a while since we had a red and white. But black and white Holstein, still in the lead with 25. Jersey, the correct answer, is 20. So we're gaining. Brown Swiss, 13. Montbéliard, 3. Dutch Belted, 3. Guernsey, 3. Ayrshire, 3. Red and white, 3. And Normandy, 2. So a wide variety. There are a few people that... There are a few people that look for other breeds besides black and white Holstein, but
a few, not many.
I know. There are a few weirdos out there.
Yes. All right. Well, you know, now that we have the serious business out of the way, we can move on to our other items of business here. So again, we have Drew with us this week, and you know, Bradley, this is a guest that you arranged, and I was really excited when I saw Drew on the docket for this week. So I'll maybe let you kind of intro why you wanted Drew on here, and then we'll finally let Drew do some talking.
I've known Drew for a while. Drew did his master's degree in animal science at the University of Minnesota with Marcia Endres, and you looked at robot feed pushing, right? And looked at how feeding times or that helped increase production, I guess. But if that's my recollection.
Yeah, so it was more working with automatic milking systems and looking at the different management practices they had on the farm. So some of the things we were looking at was looking at the feed pushers and like other management practices with milk yield. And then we also did a feed trial within one of the farms with automatic milking systems where we did a feed pellet study.
Good. See, I was wrong. I'll admit that. Well, I had the gist of it, but it's been a while. You have actually, you finished a few years ago with your master's degree and are now working in the vet school at the University of Minnesota with Dr. Gerard Kramer, who does a lot of work with lameness and hoof trimming and have ventured off into a new project. And that's why I thought we would have Drew here today. He actually just published some research this year in the Journal of Dairy Science on his work, but it really involved looking at cameras or autonomous cameras for detection of lameness in dairy cows and compared it to hoof trimming records. So lameness is always a hot topic in the dairy world, no matter if you're conventional or grazing or you name it. And lameness has always been an interest of mine, and I've studied a little bit of lameness from a grazing standpoint. But everybody knows me, we like sensors and technology. So why not use cameras to try and detect this? So tell us a little bit about the camera system first. So it is from Cattle Eye, and that is a company based out of the UK that records cows as they come out of the milking parlor.
It's a pretty simple system for how it works, for at least for like the setup, how it goes. So the way that they have it is they have the milking parlor, and then outside of the milking parlor, above the ground, looking down onto the cow. So it's going to observe the cows walk under the camera. So there's a camera above the cows on the return alley. And then the cows will walk about 3 to 4 meters underneath the camera after milking, and it'll record a video. And then it'll send the video off to wherever they keep their software. So it's more of a cloud-based system that they have going on. And then their AI algorithm will look at the footage and then assign a mobility score. So the way that they do it is from 0 to 100. But they also have a way of doing body condition scoring as well. So they also produce body condition scores. And then the way that it's recognized is through the RFID collar that the cow's wearing, and then along with recognizing the patterning of the cows. So it pairs them both at the same time. But then the specifics on that, I'm not too sure. But it does a little bit of pattern recognition and then using the RFID to let them know they're there.
Yeah, that's interesting how it records all of that information. And obviously, like most technologies, they're all proprietary algorithms and nobody wants to tell you how they figure it all out, but it is able to detect lameness, or at least try to detect lameness based on the gait of the cows. So then how many farms did you work with on your study? There was 3 farms, correct? And were they all here in the Midwest, or were they across the US?
Yeah, there were 3 farms in the Midwest area.
And they were all Holstein, right?
Yep.
All Holsteins. Yeah. Nothing against the Holsteins, but
I will say that we only pulled it for the Holsteins because everything's been worked around looking at Holsteins. So like all the validation techniques were looking at Holsteins, so we decided to keep it within the Holsteins.
And I think there's ulterior motives to all of this with working with the U.S. Council on Dairy Cattle Breeding to develop a genetic evaluation for lameness, but we can discuss that at the end for a little bit. So you worked with hoof trimmers and to capture their data based on what they recorded at trimming time. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it was kind of more of we ended up going through like their dairy management software. So DairyCom for most of these farmers. And what we did was we ended up pulling their hoof trimming records. So seeing what they put into the DairyCom systems. And then we took that as like day 0. And then we looked at how the mobility scores leading up to that event were, and kind of just compared them between whether or not like cows had lesions and didn't have lesions, and then also like kind of dug deeper in those to like just see how the trends leading up to the actual hoof trimming events were.
So the system will give a score every time the cow walks through the camera system, right?
Yep.
So then
it has the opportunity to.
Okay.
So for some cows, we ended up doing it at a weekly value. So we ended up doing like we averaged the scores for the week and took them from a weekly average because some of the cows were missing data for daily data. So I think the intention is they go under the camera and they should get recognized, but sometimes they might not.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of reasons why they might not get recognized. Maybe they lost their RFID or they went through it too fast or you name it. I think there's a lot of those issues.
So this leads into one of my questions, and it's kind of a more basic question, but yeah, could you just maybe explain how do we actually get this data? Like, how do we get the cows through the camera? Is it put in a holding pen or something? Like, is it a thing where, yes, we make sure every cow goes through it every single day if we can, or, you know, kind of the mechanics of actually getting the score, right? And getting that scan done.
Yeah, so I don't think it's anything out of the ordinary. It's going to be mainly for the lactating cows, as it's the cows that are leaving the milking parlor. So as long as there's a return alley that the cows are guaranteed to walk through or walk down, all the cows walking out of the parlor will go under those RFIDs or under the camera. And then we have a farm that has two return alleys, so they have two cameras. And then after that, you can set a timing for it. So you can either have like continuous recording if you wanted to do like 2 times milking per day, 3 times milking per day, or you can just set it up for like a shift. So some of the farms we do is just like they have it go for 8 hours. They do 3 times a day milking kind of thing. So then after that, the algorithm or the once the milking is done, it'll produce a score by the next day. And then you can just log on to their website or like their platform, or you can have it incorporate into Dairy Comp and you can get the scores like that.
So it will give you a score every day. I didn't realize that it would integrate back into Dairy Comp, so farmers could actually look right at Dairy Comp and figure that out, which makes it a lot easier to... Brad is not a big fan of having multiple systems and computers in barn offices. I have 4 computers in our barn office that are running different technology, and it is maddening. But anyways, that's a different story for another day. You looked at all these trimming records. Do you know what... So what is the biggest issue on farms that you worked with? Is it digital dermatitis or hoof warts, or is it sole ulcers or white line disease? What were the biggest lesions on these farms? I'm just curious to remember what that might be.
There's kind of variation between the farms, but the ones that we see the most in the study was digital dermatitis. And then, so that's kind of the more of the infectious hoof lesion. And then we also looked at white line and sole ulcers, which were the like the non-infectious hoof lesions. But then one of like the challenges in the study is that when we were like looking at things in the past, that since we took 5 years of data, we had to calibrate them. We had to calibrate the hoof trimmers. So kind of had different meanings in the beginning and things like that that made, you know, that analysis a little hard. But yeah, I would say that to answer your question, digital dermatitis was the most common lesion that we had.
So how did you get to calibrate hoof trimmers? Where sometimes they didn't call some things lesions or not, or how did that work out?
Yeah, so I would have to say this part was less on me and more on Gerard. So before I got into the lab, he was doing this calibration part since it was 5 years of data and I wasn't here yet. But I think it was more making sure that we called everything the same thing. So like with digital dermatitis, you can call it digital dermatitis, DD, strawberry foot, and the name goes on. So when it comes down to like recording it in the softwares that they're using, you can have different names. So then it's just more difficult on the back end. And then also with the different softwares that the trimmers were using, just kind of getting everybody on like the same page and like how we should call it and like the locations. So basically look at like taking the perceptions from the ICAR atlas for hoof health and going off that.
Okay. So let's get into the nitty gritty and what did we all find? So you tried to figure out whether the cattle eye was trying to predict lesions or some sort of lameness in these cows. Did it do that? Or how well did the system work at recognizing either locomotion changes or any sort of trends with hoof lesions?
So this is where it gets tricky. So when we look at things like whether or not the cow that had the hoof trimming event, let's say whether she was a cow that went to the hoof trimmer and she had a lesion, or she did not have a lesion and she just received the hoof trimming. So we'll call those cows the trim cows and the lesion cows. So just like at the broad level between them, when we kind of looked at the scores, what we saw is that like at the population level, I think this is very important. At the population level, we saw that the median score was kind of consistent throughout all 4 weeks leading up to the hoof trimming event. But then for the cows that had hoof lesions, we saw that the median score increased. So like their distribution was shifting upwards. But I think the challenge here is that when it comes to like using this technology and like looking at an individual cow level instead of a prop population based level is like, where do you draw that line for the change in score to get the cow to go to the hoof trimmer? Like, should we use a specific cut? If we use a specific like numbers, like say 50 or greater, send the cow to the hoof trimmer. We have a lot of false positives going to the hoof trimmer, and right, that costs money, and we kind of want to figure a way how to make it more efficient. But so I would say that we did see for the cows that did not have hoof lesions and the cow that had hoof lesions, we did see a pattern that cows that were going to have that had lesions at the hoof trimming event had like their distribution of scores increase. But then it also gets challenging as what we saw about when we looked at the specific types of hoof lesions, they all had different patterns. So it's kind of figuring out how we can use these scores to get at detecting these lesions.
I think that's interesting that you see different patterns with the cameras with different lesions. And I would probably guess that some of the hoof lesions, especially where they're located in the hoof, might produce a different gait than some other ones. So you get different patterns and different scores based on that. So I can see where it might be difficult to try and figure out what lesion is happening or how lame those cows are and what the cut point is. I think we see that in all technology where you might be getting some false positives, and you don't want to bring cows to a hoof trimmer that doesn't really need to and will cost extra money. But it is always interesting when I talk to farmers about precision technologies, especially with activity monitoring systems trying to detect disease, they always want to know, how many days before can I detect a disease? How many days? And was there any, not to put you on the spot, but what are the number of days before something happens? Or could you be able to tell that? Or were you seeing trends maybe a week before this happened? Or did they come on all of a sudden? I think every cow is different, but was there any trends that you'd notice there?
Yeah, so when trying to look at like whether or not how early the cows can, or the how early producers can start detecting animals, I would say that we don't really have the data on that one yet to answer, because I know we're trying different algorithms or like trying different methods, like different changes in scores, and just trying to figure out how we can get like the most accurate readings. But I don't think we have the ability to do that yet.
Where does this go in the future? What are some things that you're going to look at with this information or this Cattle Eye project, and where might farmers use that?
Yeah, so I think where I think this would be like most beneficial in like an applied perspective is figuring out how we can use the data produced by this system and then pairing it with other data collected on the farm. So we currently just ran a study trying to answer this question. So what we've done so far is we enrolled about 500 cows in a study where we hoof trimmed them, or we took a sliver off their hooves and hoof tested them, make sure they didn't have any lesions. And we enrolled them into the study. So we enrolled about 500 healthy cows. And about 100, 120 days later, we reevaluated all the cows. So then we gave these cows like a full trim, like therapeutic, recorded all the hemorrhages that they've had. So at the baseline or at the first enrollment, we looked at like, what was going on with the hoof? Like, was there any damage, like any hemorrhaging going on? And then if they had like severe lesions, such as like white lines, sole ulcers, toe ulcers, digital dermatitis, we didn't continue with those. So we wanted like cows that weren't having active lesions per se. And then we followed these cows up 100 to 120 days later. And then we evaluated their hooves again. And what we did was to see what lesions they've had. So now we have 120 days of Cattle Eye scores roughly for each of these cows. And then we also had access to the producer's dairy comp. So then we pulled a whole bunch of milk data and just activity data and changes like that. So what we're working on now that we have all the data and it comes to fun play around part and trying to detect lesions, is now we're building machine learning algorithms to try to detect, to see if we can make an algorithm that can like classify cows as having a lesion or not, so then we can have a applicable use for the technology on the farms.
Well, that's good. I think there's a lot of promise for this in the future. Obviously, a lot of people have tried it with cameras are probably the number one hot topic with trying to figure things out on a dairy farm nowadays, especially with feeding and lameness detection and you name it. As a follow-up to this project, actually, I know your advisor, Gerard, is working with the Council on Dairy Cattle Breeding, which does the genetic evaluations here in the U.S. So they're trying to look at developing a genetic evaluation for lameness scores in the U.S. for cows and bulls based on cattle eye data and trying to figure that out. I know there's other countries, namely Sweden, has had hoof health evaluations for many, many years, and other countries in Europe as well. So the U.S. is a little behind, but it's always good to see trying to develop new information. So I'm glad that your research will help develop genetic evaluations for cows and bulls in the future.
So I have one final question. You and Brad were kind of going back and forth so quickly. You know, we like to talk about things as being management tools and the like on this podcast. And, you know, also just thinking about what is the on-farm application with it. And so I'm curious, you know, what sort of feedback, if any, you got from the farmer cooperators you were working with in the study. You know, did they think it was a useful tool? You know, did they say, hey, this is something I'd want to have? And also, you know, what did the hoof trimmers think about it? You know, I know we have some listeners who are hoof trimmers. So I'm sure they're curious, you know, what did their colleagues think about this technology as well? So what was the feedback from the farmers and the trimmers?
So from the hoof trimmer perspective, I haven't really heard too much back from them about the technology itself. But I do know that the producers that we work with are still using the technology. But at the end, like, we're all still trying to figure out how we can actually use this. So sure, we can get a mobility score. But then the question is, how can we use this mobility score to actually like tackle lameness? Because if we're seeing cows with threshold above 50, and let's say that's what we're going to call lame cows off the software itself, and we're sending cows to the hoof trimmer and they're not lame, now we're getting charged from a hoof trimmer for not using, or for we're sending a cow to the hoof trimmer to get trimmed, and that's going to be an expense. And then there's also some research out there that shows sending cows to the hoof trimmer that don't have lesions actually impacts like their milk production and like their behaviors moving forward. So now it's like kind of a, you're not only losing money directly by paying the hoof trimmer, but now you have like indirect losses by not producing more milk and like messing with the cow. So I think the main question is, how can we actually use this technology moving forward to tackle lameness? I will say I think hoof trimmers get more mad about treating cows than like, not mad from like a perspective of like that they're treating the cows, but like it slows them down, so they're getting through less cows. So hoof trimmers would rather trim healthy cows.
I agree with you there. And I've had lots of conversations with hoof trimmers about that, where sometimes it can be demoralizing to go to a farm and you're just working with cows with bad hooves all day. And kind of nice to have, you can trim 100 cows a day or more and they're all just normal, and it's a good day to trim cows that don't have any problems.
I would agree. I think hoof trimmers take pride in their work and like the hoof health on dairy farms. I think they're a big collaborator there. And I'm not sure if they're undervalued or not, but I know that, like, I spent some time with hoof trimmers during my PhD, and like they kind of worked with me on trimming. And it's just like one of those things, like they take pride in what they do. And they, yeah, sorry, I'll get off my rant.
No, I agree. I sometimes think they are undervalued on farms because they're just in there to fix problems. And I could go on days about hoof trimming and fixing problems. And that was one of the reasons why I started hoof trimming at our dairy twice a year, because we were having so many problems, and it was like getting the hoof trimmer in there to fix problems. And now we can trim 300 cows in one day with a bunch of trimmers, and we have 10 problem cows. So it's much better now, doing a lot better job on hoof trimming. That's another subject for another day. And wrote a Progressive Dairy article about it and got lots of good comments. So trim your cows more than just problem cows. I'll leave it at that.
We can wrap it there. Thank you again so much, Drew, for coming on today and talking cattle eye and hoof trimming. And I know I learned a lot, and it's always interesting to learn about the latest technology and sensor that we're seeing in dairy farming. So thank you again so much, Drew, for stopping by the podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or scathing rebuttals about today's episode, you can email those to themooseroom@umn.edu. You can also call and leave us a voicemail at 612-624-3610. Find us on the web, extension.umn.edu. And that's a wrap. Bye.